Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, Moors. Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay. And tonight's broadcast is going to be Redeeming Your Straw Man Part 2. And we're going to be dealing with the following questions. What is the construction of the straw man? How does the Fed come into play? What is the mechanics behind redemption of the straw man? What words should we look out for? What would the world look like without money? What is the biggest fraud ever in the United States? These are some of the topics that we're going to deal with this evening. And we're going to look directly at the money and to determine whether or not we got some real money and all of these things we're going to cover this evening. So we want you to sit tight. Keep in mind that on August the 16th to the 18th, we're having the Morris Summit 2 here in Jacksonville, Florida, right here in the Wyndham Hotel. And we want you to make it your business to get here. August 16th through the 18th, right here, Morris Summit 2. Don't miss this powerful event. Also, for those of you who are on your social sites, if you're on Facebook, if you're on Twitter, if you're on MySpace, or Dig, send me a friend request to Tahaka Amana El Bay. And I'll grant that friend request, and that way you have access to my wall and the articles and stuff that we place there for your education, okay? And we want to add also that we are giving out free articles today, as usual, the 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Comments Game and Secrets of America. Just send me an email to the Tahaka53@hotmail.com, and we will rush that right over to you. Okay, so you all sit tight and we'll be ready to go.
Greetings. I'd like to invite you out to the Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th, 2013, located in Jacksonville, Florida. 3 days of executing and planning of executive plans for 25-year agenda, operating as an economic unit. The presenters will be Shem L. of the Tamarain 2 Project, Dr. Ali Muhammad and Minister Inki of the Black Genetic Tour, Sundiana Amael, Professor Asif Deanham L., Tahaka Amana L., Abundance Child, Fatima, the Alchemist Shabazz, Messiah L., and more. Topics will be the execution of urban geoponics, creating independent distribution systems, creating independent economic systems, genetics, private security force, the wholesale and manufacturing of natural products, Moorestown, creating one in every state, Moore's Eastside Farms, putting one in every state. You do not want to miss this summit. It is very enlightening, empowering, and most of all, it's applicable. Everything that we talk about, we do. Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Log on to www.summitofthemoors.com. summitofthemoors.com. You can register for free. The summit is always free. You can also get your hotel room, which will be on the river at the Wyndham Hotel. That's www.summitofthemoors.com. The summits are always free. See you at the summit.
Okay, Moors, we got a new website up. It's newfreehelpgroup.com. Now, when you go over to newfreehelpgroup.com, make sure you examine everything that's there. We put several packages up for those people who have, if you're in your house upside down and you just want to cancel your mortgage outright. It's all illegal anyway. Just go right over there to newfreehelpgroup.com, and the link of talkarchives.org is there. If you click on that, you will see all the packages that's made available to you. Now, don't forget, you cancel your debt, you got a student loan debt, child support debt, credit card debt, all that can be dealt with. And any other contract cancellations, you'll see all the packages that's there made available. But what we are doing is, for anybody that's accessing these packages all the way up until July, we're adding to our archives to each one. So don't forget, go right there to newfreehelpgroup.com and click on the link at talkarchives.org, and everything is sitting right there waiting on you. Okay? Peace, Mose.
Okay, Mose, we back. Now, what we're going to look at now is we're going to look at the reality of the banking system right here in the United States in conjunction with the money that you have or that we think we have. So we're going to run a quick experiment. I want you to watch how this thing go down and listen very carefully to what's going on.
Hey, you guys hiring?
No, we're not right now.
I used to work at Kinko's, man. I'm good at printing stuff. I can counterfeit with the best of you. We're going to talk about the Federal Reserve, and we're going to talk about dollar bills or Federal Reserve notes produced in 1934, which gave this little legal notice, which is right here, which states that this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private, and is redeemable and lawful. Lawful money, 1792 Coinage Act. Lawful money at the United States Treasury or at any Federal Reserve bank. So we went to try this out, and we tried to get our money, lawful money, which is, according to the 1792 Coinage Act, is 0.77 ounces of silver. That's what a dollar was defined at. So if that's what a dollar is defined at, if I have $100 bill or $100 Federal Reserve note, they should give me 100.77 ounces of silver. Of course, they're not going to do that because they don't have any money. So, no lawful money. They have this fiat bullshit. Now, if you go to the 1792 Coinage Act, it also says it's very strict on about what counterfeiting is, and it's actually very treasonous, and it could be lead to the death penalty for counterfeiting. And the Federal Reserve is very good at counterfeiting, and I have a printing machine. I'm not printing those Federal Reserve notes, but if I wanted to, I could print them just as good as they do. Maybe I won't have the little marks that they have do. Maybe it's not quite as fancy, but it's still the same worthless piece of paper you can go wipe your with. We just want to know, where can we get our lawful money?
Right now, we're here at the Federal Reserve Bank. We have a $100 bill, and we're going to try to redeem it for lawful money.
Hey, this is the Federal Reserve, right?
Yes.
Okay, I have a $100 bill here, and it says this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private.
Yeah, we don't do that.
Yeah.
Transactions.
Yeah, but it says I can go to the Federal Reserve Bank and redeem this.
Stand by for a second, please.
Okay.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. What's up?
Hey, well, I have this $100 bill, and I wanted to redeem it for lawful money.
What?
So,
okay, what do you have?
I have a $100 bill here, and it says it's redeemable. It's a Federal Reserve note, and it says that I can redeem it for lawful money, and I was wanting to do that.
You can't do it here.
I can't get lawful money here?
No.
Where can I?
We're not a bank open to the public.
So which Federal Reserve Bank do we go to?
Yeah, which Federal Reserve Bank do we go to get lawful money where I can get real money?
Mail it to the Treasury.
So
but I don't have the pamphlet here right now.
So did they mail Morgan dollars back, or what kind of, where can I get silver?
I have no idea.
Silver Morgan dollars back?
I have no idea. Have you looked online to see how you go about doing that?
Yeah, you guys are all secretive. I can't even, there ain't no numbers. You can't get a hold of anybody. It's a private bank.
I would suggest that you try looking through the Treasury office.
Okay.
And see what you can find out, because redeeming money here...
No, I'm not redeeming money. I'm redeeming a piece of paper for lawful money. That's what I'm trying to do.
We don't have any of that here.
We have a contract with the Federal
Reserve. We know you don't have any real lawful money anymore, but you guys stole that gold a long time ago.
What are all the guards doing? What are they guarding?
Yeah, what are you guys guarding if you don't have no lawful money here?
it's all a matter of opinion.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
So we're at the Federal Reserve, man. What happened?
Well, I tried to redeem my... I got this payment, and I was looking at it, and I noticed something unusual about it. And I was reading it. It said, we'll pay to the bearer upon demand $100. So if it's payable to the bearer upon demand $100, well, then what is this? This is a piece of paper, basically. It's an IOU from the Federal Reserve. And it says right up here in the corner, it says, if I go to any Federal Reserve Bank, they'll redeem it in lawful money. What is lawful money? Lawful money is 1792 coinage, $1 is 0.77 ounces of silver. So what I was hoping to do is go into the Federal Reserve Bank today, and I'd walk out of there with 77 ounces of silver. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. They told me I had to go talk to the Treasury. Apparently, they're only shuffling around paper money. They don't deal with any real money anymore. They're only in the printing business.
Yeah.
Like the Kinko's satellite facility right here.
Now, the issue is, what other corporation in America can renege on a contract? What is the process that has to be involved with that? Usually it has to be somebody in bankruptcy that can renege on a contract like that. I would guess that either they just don't want to pay, or they're in bankruptcy, the Federal Reserve, and the IMF is controlling all their assets. They promised to pay. It's right here. This legal notice, blah, 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 and you could turn it into any Federal Reserve. That is a contract with the people and the Treasury that says, I promise to pay on demand, that if you come in here with this IOU, that you're going to give me some Morgan dollars, some silver, some gold, lawful money, which is, according to the 1792 Coinage Act, which is a dollar bill is 0.77 ounces of silver. So I need 100, or in case this would be 500 Morgan dollars, which was legit up in the 20s and before, I think maybe 33, I'm not for sure, but that was all good. But this was series in 1934, so it's not good anymore. This is bunk. So to me, do they have a AAA rating? Hell no. You can't go get your money back. Lawful money.
Okay, Morris, now let's take a look at the Federal Reserve itself. Let's see what's going on with the Federal Reserve before we get into the straw man. Okay?
Well, in America today, we are getting closer to fully exposing the greatest con and cover-up in the history of this country. It involves our banks, the Federal Reserve, our Congress, and of course, you and me. First, though, think of the Fed as the godfather in this con.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse. Can you pull outside and enjoy yourself?
The role of the godfather, played by former Fed Chief Alan Greenspan, who appeared before the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission this morning, denying that he ever knew what he helped perpetrate.
the notion that we in any way favored any of them or basically were influenced with respect to policy by what they said, other than the facts they gave us, which we always evaluated, I saw no evidence of that in my tenure.
And he may not have had favorite among the banks because Greenspan was working for all of the banks against you, the bankers, of course, the unrepentant con men being supported by the Federal Reserve.
You picked him clean. He never was back.
Remember that sting experience, how good you felt?
So good getting that money for free, getting away with it. Here's how the con went down. The bankers were operating under an implicit guarantee from the godfather, the Federal Reserve, in the form of guaranteed low interest rates, guaranteed cheap money exclusively for the con men. Then Chairman Greenspan, the godfather, would agree to hold those rates, let's say 2% for as far as the eye could see. The banks, or bankers, the con men, would borrow that money from the Federal Reserve, let's say 2%, and then turn around and lend it back to you at, let's say, 6%. That encouraged the patsies, you and me, to be drawn into the con because 6% looks like a pretty low rate. Low rates for houses, low rates for cars. Heck, you can join a health club, make that on payments, they'll turn that into bonds, and of course, promises of a higher than average return for those managing teachers and policemen and judges' pension funds that are buying into the con as well. And here exactly is where the con comes in. As you and I both know, the banks had no money. They were getting it from the Federal Reserve, which is us. It's funny money. They had no capital to back up their lending. But that did not matter because they also had no risk in the lending. If the lending paid off, they win. And they won big when they did that because they did it with leverage. Top Manhattan executives alone paid themselves $121 billion in bonuses over the first part of the decade. Now, mind you, when the bank loans failed, they knew they were too big to fail. So the rest of us, you and me, would have to bail them out. The ignorant electorate, if you will, the patsies, who had no idea, and really still don't, understand how badly they are being conned by our government and our banks. Once the banks, however, realized there was no losing, the question was, how do we make the con bigger? How do we get more money through this crazy machine so we can get richer? The question, or the answer, I should say, is simple. Make more loans, more credit card loans. Think of all the credit card applications that were sent to you over the past 10 years. More car loans. It's the reason General Motors went upside down. It wasn't the cars. It was because they were running a financing scheme. Home loans, you know the narrative. So the people most hurt by this con, the home buyers, the cops, the teachers, pensioners who were suckered in by the bait of low credit and high returns in exchange for buying worthless toxic assets manufactured by the bankers. That's why your pension fund was wiped out. That's why the interest rate on your savings to this day remains around zero. If you're a retiree, you know what I'm talking about. It's also why you're now drowning in a mortgage on a house that's worth far less than you owe because the bankers were happy to lend you money they did not have to drive up the price of that house because they knew the more loans the better, but no downside for them. So what's next? Higher taxes for us, higher interest rates for us to pay for the bailouts while our government that was theoretically elected by us refuses to recover the stolen money by the con men or fix the system that allows them to continue to perpetrate the con against you and me. The current financial reform legislation proposed by our government would give the godfather, the Federal Reserve in this case, even more power to regulate the game. The con men, represented by the Wall Street bankers, of course, giving our Congress a cut of the action, $344 million so far lobbying against the bill, second only to health care. We saw how well it worked out for special interests on health care. Home run. They got a guaranteed customer base with no reform. I'm sure the bankers will do pretty well as well. All this, of course, while assuring our lawmakers, many of whom do not even understand how the con works in the first place, that the financial crisis has been fixed, of course, with an infinite supply of your money. After all, just check out stocks over the past year. We are back over 10,000 on the Dow, thanks to that blank check from the Federal Reserve. So now, as we finally head towards Congress debating financial reform in our country, the question must be asked, does it make sense for our government to give more power to a Federal Reserve and banker con men who unrepentantly cause this crisis and make money at your expense on the pension side and on the credit side. That's the current plan. Give them more power. Joining us now, Congressman Alan Grayson, Democrat from Florida, who sponsored the audit the Fed bill with Ron Paul. Congressman, pleasure to see you again. And on the phone, Bill Fleckenstein, president of Fleckenstein Capital, and more importantly, author of Irrational Exuberance, The Greenspan Bubble. Bill does an exceptional job of explaining exactly how the godfather, Alan Greenspan, allowed the banks to perpetrate this con. In fact, Bill profited rather handsomely betting against the con, knowing that it was a bubble. I know, Congressman Grayson, that you understand more or less everything that I just said, and then some, and are likely more frustrated than I am at our Congress's unwillingness to actually acknowledge or understand the con or address it. Why do you think it has been so difficult and continues to be difficult for anybody in our Congress to really deal with this?
Well, I have the benefit of having worked as an economist for 4 years before I was elected to Congress, and that does give me some insight into how all this works. I think a lot of people on Capitol Hill simply don't understand how this works the way you just described it. Clearly, they should be listening to your show.
If you don't understand that the bank's incentive is to lend
to your show.
If you don't understand that the bank's incentive is to lend as much money as possible without any repercussions because the only way they make money is with lots of lending or gambling effectively, and the everybody else's incentive is to try not to get screwed, and yet the Congress is feeding the money to those who have a directly adverse incentive. They make money by screwing over pensioners and borrowers, and our Congress is making that more possible, not less possible. How did we find ourselves in this situation?
Well, I think the fundamental problem is campaign finance reform. I'm not trying to change the subject
but I want to point out
that we wouldn't have this problem except for the fact that lobbyists hand out $5,000 checks.
Bill, explain in the simplest sense why it is Alan Greenspan is so directly responsible for creating this con.
Well, first of all, let me say, Dylan, yours was one of the most succinct explanations of the problem that I've heard, so that was quite a good send-up that you did. Because Greenspan is ultimately responsible because A, he was the one who put rates at a level that was too low and then refused in the face of all evidence to do anything to try to retard the potential for an asset bubble. He was in denial about the equity bubble and then turned around and created the credit/housing bubble, and to this day refuses to accept any responsibility for it. When prices are held at an artificially too low of level, by putting too much money in the system, that money seeks its way out into other places, and if you and it will end up creating a bubble. And the more leverage used in the bubble, the more dangerous it becomes. Greenspan not only made the interest rates too low, he advocated the policies and he cheerled for the housing bubble. For instance, he made a speech where he tried to explain why housing could not possibly be a bubble. So it was not just his conduct of monetary policy, it was the things, the speeches he made, and he was held in such high regard, other people adopted his behavior and his philosophies.
Congressman Grayson, you mentioned campaign finance reform and the need to get the lobbyists out because the lobbyists, the bank lobbyists, $344 million, a cut of the action on the con goes to Congress. Are you as cynical as that would suggest that basically Congress knows that they should create transparency and capital requirements, which would end the ability for there to be a con like this, but refuses to do so because they're afraid of losing that those checks?
I think it's worse than that, actually. We lived through an economic disaster, and now we're slowly recovering from it. We lost 20% of our national wealth in 18 months, the last 18 months of the Bush administration, and housing topped out 3.5 years ago, not just in Florida, but around the country. And nobody has been held responsible, not Alan Greenspan, not anybody else. In Japan, they have a way different solution to these kinds of problems. It's called hari-kari.
I think what confuses people at this point, Congressman, and having been talking about this incessantly for a few years now, most people, if you look at the polling, understand at least enough of this to know that Congress works for the banks, not for the American people, and yet Congress still seems phenomenally willing to drag its feet in addressing this. Hari-kari may be interesting or nice. We're probably not going to see it. We live in a democracy where we're told we elect people who look out for our interests, and yet the same people are creating laws that allow this group to con the American people out of the largest transfer of wealth in the history of the world with no consequences. Are you suggesting special interests have so much control that our government literally is willing to facilitate that level of wealth transfer with no consequences?
I think that's a fair statement, and I would add to what was said before that we've got the creation of the idea of too big to fail under Alan Greenspan. We've got him gunning the economy through the Y2K money supply increase that led to economic disaster within 4 months. He made mistake after mistake after mistake, and what we never hear from any of these people is, I'm sorry. We don't even hear that.
I think it's because the system is enslaved.
Yes, that's right. And the Senate bill, unfortunately, does that. The Senate bill takes whatever possibility there is of somebody who's actually looking out for the consumer and puts that in, of all places, the Federal Reserve as the one responsible to do that. The Federal Reserve, which is actually run by big banks, it's governed by big banks. They choose the people who occupy the seats of power in each regional bank.
And yet we're going to be giving them more power.
Bill.
Dylan, you know, if the American banking system, if the directors and higher-ups there were held personally liable for some of the problems, as they are in Brazil, for instance, and as they used to be in this country 70 years ago, then you might get a level of oversight on the banks and have them pursue policies that we would wind up finding less odiferous. It's not that difficult. You just have to make the guys in charge personally liable for some of the problems, and some of this behavior would go away.
Any chance of that, Congressman?
Yes, in fact, we're working on a bill to do exactly that, and we've examined what happens in other countries when they make the kinds of mistakes we've seen the last few years in America, and it's not a pretty picture for the people in charge, either in Wall Street or in the Capitol.
Listen, Congressman, we appreciate your efforts on our behalf to correct for the con and get the money back and fix the system, and Bill...
Okay, Moles, we're back. Now, we just took a look at this whole thing. From the banks, the funding money, the refusal to honor promise, because it all means one thing. The United States is operating in a bankruptcy, okay? Now, let's go back and take up from where we left off at with the redeeming of your straw man, because in order for them to do the things they do, what they'll have to do is they're going to have to, if they're a corporation, they're going to make you a corporation. But the biggest scam of all is leading you to believe that you are a citizen of a country. A corporation can't have no citizens, because if United States of America Incorporated could have citizens, then why couldn't Walmart have citizens? You see what I'm saying? So let's take a look at and take up where we left off at with the redeeming of
paying customers. I mean, people that have been arrested, that it's supposed to be a public proceeding, but they got so many people that have been charged that if you don't have an information against you or a ticket against you, you won't even get a seat. And that's how many people are in here. But you're going to see this, that the court hasn't even been in session 15 minutes and they're up over $40,000 in fines. I was amazed to find guys who were DUI, right, that they got in wrecks, they hurt people. No jail time, a $5,000 fine, 5 years probation, with one of the terms of probation at the end of 5 years is that you've paid the $5,000 fine. All right. So if you violate your probation, then they can throw you in jail for the full jail sentence. So what they're doing, they're using the jail sentence over here as a hammer, holding it over your head, saying, you better pay this fine, because if you don't pay the fine, we're going to throw you in jail. See, they don't want to throw you in jail for DUI. They want you to be paying fines. That's the name of the game with DUI.
Funny.
You know, it was like a conversation I had with a guy. I was waiting for a table at a restaurant, and I was talking to this guy, and I told him, I said, I personally don't agree with the DUI laws. And he looked at me like I was his best friend. You know, he personally had three or four DUIs. Every time he got in an accident or people that were hurt, he hadn't gone to jail yet. And he had one fine of $5,000. The next time he got $7,000, and the fines are just going up. And he's, you know, working, goes down to his probation officer, and he's making his all his little payments. And he knows he can drive as drunk as he wants. He's just going to have to keep getting these fines that he has to pay. And he thought I was his best friend when I said I disagree with the DUI. And I said the real issue should be, if you are incapable of controlling yourself, I don't care if you haven't had any beers, right? And you drive in an irresponsible manner and you hurt someone, right? Especially you kill someone, you should be in the hot seat. Well, he looked at me like I was the worst thing in the world.
Right.
And he said, if it was that way, I would go to 7-Eleven and buy a case of beer and go home and drink it. And I'm like, imagine that. Personal accountability.
Sure.
If you'd
that's
have
what
to,
the Bible's full of.
Exactly.
Personal accountability.
But see, if people were personally accountable, they couldn't make all this money through this corrupt court system.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Well, good. Well, John, we sure appreciate your time, and there's a million other rabbit trails I'd like to go down. I've got quite a list here in front of me. I don't want Christians who haven't discovered their liberty
mm-hmm.
to get mad at me because I have.
Right.
And yeah. that's what happened. It's really sad.
Yeah, and all I can say is when you meet someone who has discovered what's going on, there's a whole another world out there that you may not have stumbled upon. And so if somebody's out there driving without a driver's license, it may be sinful for you at that point to get rid of your driver's license, because if you honestly believe that that God had ordained that government in that a driver's license was a valid exercise of legislative authority, then I think you need to have that driver's license. But if you have if you personally went and you saw your deacons at your church, you know, you went to pick up your hat you forgot on a Monday morning, and you saw the deacons sitting there laughing in the back room, and they were taking all the money that came in, and they were giving it to the church of Satan, saying, those dumb Christians, what would you do? Would you say, well, God put those elders in there, and I just have to follow them, and I gave it in good faith, so, you know, God's going to bless me. Well, once you had knowledge of the corruption that was going on there, you need to, one, tell the other people in the church what the deacons are doing with your money. And now, if next Sunday you didn't tell everyone, you come in and you continue giving that money, knowing that it's being used for satanic purposes, I don't believe God would bless that offering
at
that point in time.
At that point, you're liable.
So, if people have discovered exactly what the alleged government has done to us, and they are exercising their liberties, and they are doing so at a great risk of being thrown in jail and things like that, I would not be ridiculing them. I would not be judging them. But, like I say, we need to study so we will know how to properly apply Scripture.
Sure. Two movies that, I don't go off on two more hour rabbit trail here. We won't do that. But if people watch the Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
The Yellow Brick Road.
Yeah, that's amazing because that's all full of symbolism. You know?
They spelled out the whole plan. The Yellow Brick Road is the money. You follow the money trail.
Yes, yes.
And the straw man
has
no brain.
And that came out like in 1938. The U.S. was bankrupted in 1933. You know, bankruptcy is like a legal proceeding. And Dorothy was told if she didn't hand over that dog, Toto, right, and the lawsuit was going to be filed, it was going to take the whole farm, and you know, then when she woke up, we're not in Kansas anymore. Well, hello, state of Kansas in Kansas, you know, there was a fiction, right? So she was now in this fictional.
Went from the reality to the fiction across that mirror.
The wizard's amazing. They get to the end, they're looking for this great Oz, and all of a sudden they find out who he really is.
A little man behind the curtain.
Yeah.
They
ain't no attention to that little man behind the curtain. Right,
right. Right.
And it's just like what's talked about in Scripture here in Isaiah 14. And where you start reading the fall of Lucifer, and it talks about, here at verse 16, it says, they that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake the kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of his prisoners?
This is the guy who did it.
Is this the great wizard?
Satan's going to be a little guy. We're all going to see Jesus just toss him into hell for 1,000 years.
It's amazing. You know, yeah. It's now I look at him completely different. It's not as a powerful guy. He's this tiny little dweeb that you could probably flick out of your life. But The only thing he's got going for himself is deception.
Yeah.
And he appears to be very powerful. He appears to, and it is an incredible deception.
Yeah. Which is exactly what The Wizard of Oz was.
Exactly.
The other movie is The Matrix.
That's
now. These are heathen movies.
Right.
Put out and some bad language and all this kind of stuff. But the concept they're getting across is the same thing about the two different worlds.
Yes, that's right. Now, you know, it's amazing. A lot of people don't understand why we teach art to children in school and why schools have always had art in there. And that's very simply because art, you look at art and you see a cross-section of where your society is at that point in time. If you look at art from the 16th century or look at art during the Dark Ages, you know, there wasn't a lot of art going on then. But then you look at the Renaissance and all this stuff, and you can get a good cross-section. Jack Kevorkian, in his paintings, you know, he's got pictures of guys just clawing and scraping down into, like, this pit, fighting for their life. And you look at his paintings, and you can tell what he's like, right? And same thing with art. You know, movies are just another, you know, form of art. And you look at a movie and you can basically see where your society is by looking at that art. And as our society's gone down the tubes, you can see that depicted in the movies of that day. And same thing with Wizard of Oz. You know, earlier I was talking about notice and grace, and I think this is one way that we are given notice what's happened to us. It's interesting, in the Wizard of Oz, that was first written in a book called The Emerald City. And Dorothy's slippers were silver. But when they made the movie, they switched it to ruby because they figured that with so much symbolism, people would have easily realized what had happened to them going through the Great Depression.
They took the silver away.
Exactly. So they changed it from silver slippers to ruby slippers, and it was the silver slippers following the golden road back, and that was how Dorothy could actually get from down here, the fictional state, back up to the real Kansas, follow the gold, find out what the bankers did to the country, and there was your answer. So Matrix, again, a lot of symbolism, and I can see how we've all been sucked into the fiction. The Matrix is a fiction, and we got the web, the internet, and there's a lot of symbolism going on there, and ultimately there's a question that talks about, do you want the red pill or the blue pill? If you take the blue pill, you won't have any knowledge of the Matrix, how it works, or the red pill, you can go on and live your life, you have knowledge of the Matrix, and you can try and make the appropriate changes for good. I want the red pill.
Some people don't want to know. They're having a blizzard, leave them alone, okay? Our founding fathers that started this country a couple hundred years ago, about 3% of the population supported them.
The vast majority
said, we don't care. We don't care if we serve King George. We don't care who it is. You know, just tell us who won when it's over.
Right.
Okay. And an awful lot of people are in that state today. And a very small percentage followed George Washington, you know, and were willing to risk all,
mm-hmm.
But I'm glad they did.
Yep.
Matter of fact, everybody today is glad they did. We put their money, we put their faces on our money, and we, you know, build big statues in our courthouse, et cetera, et cetera. But had we been in that same situation, a small percentage, nothing's changed, 3 or 4%.
Right, still fighting the battle.
And it amazes me how that, you know, my ministry's all on creation, evolution, because I think evolution, the idea that man is God, is really the foundation of this whole fiction.
That's right. That's right.
And so I want to reach it right at the root of everything else. And this stuff about IRS and Social Security, this is a little rabbit trail that I don't want to waste a lot of time on. But it is. I think it's part of the major, it's part of the fiction.
That's right.
And so I think people need to be exposed to it. And should you choose to say, hey, that's a battle worth fighting, I don't have time to fight every battle in the world. I decided I can't pick up every piece of litter on the highway. I can't fix everybody's broken car in the world. I can't fix everybody's, you know, plugged up sink in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to do that. I just don't have time to do everybody's, okay?
Right. Yeah.
I have to pick and choose which battles are worth fighting. In my seminar, 15 hours long, I kick a lot of dogs as I walk by and say, hey, if you want more, follow this trail. There's a lot more information there.
That's right.
But I'd like to encourage people, as we kick this dog about, you know, IRS and redeeming your straw man, et cetera, don't waste a lot of time, you know. Stay with the focus of getting people saved.
That's right.
You know, and then once you get them saved, ground them and get them going so they can go produce more fruit.
That's right.
But if we're, if we've made ourselves slaves, all through the Bible, you see where the children of Israel fell into slavery, and then they begged God, "Get me out of this."
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
I've experienced the freedom of being in the real world instead of the fictional world. I believe I'm pretty well out, and it's wonderful.
Yes, it is.
And I'll take the red pill too. I'd like to know. Some people don't want to know.
What's even worse, after people know and then they're aware that there's a decision to make, then they say, "Give me the blue."
Sure. And I can't help those people.
That's right.
There's nothing you can do for them. If you want
right.
the blue pill, just take it, you know. But some people say, as far as the future, you know, they don't want to study prophecy and what's coming with the mark of the beast and the world, you know, everybody being killed, and they don't want to know all that. Well, I think I'd rather know.
Me too.
I'd rather walk in with my eyes wide open, knowing, hey, you're about to be shot.
Yes.
You know? Well, okay. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, you know, they all faced their trials. Jesus grew up under Roman control. All the disciples did. All their whole life under Roman oppression, you know, under the thumb. Joseph sold to slavery, you know, to be down to Pharaoh. And the children of Israel lived under slavery. You can live for God under any situation.
That's right.
It's a little easier under some than others, and I'd rather not be, you know, stretched on the rack and tortured and have my skin ripped off and all this kind of stuff. But it's happened.
Yes, it has.
And it's going to happen again.
And they have a great reward in heaven.
Sure. And it's easy for us to sit here, you know, and say that when we're not in pain.
That's right.
But it's happened all across the country. You know, people say, you know, we're going to be out of here before the tribulation. Well, I'm with you. I believe Christians are going to be raptured out also. But tell that to the Chinese Christians.
That's a very good point.
They're already going through it, you know. Yeah. I mean, right now, they're being dragged out of their churches, and just for going to church, they break their ankles.
That's correct. And I believe even if we're right, and we're out of here before the Great Tribulation, I think we are going to be persecuted terribly before that happens.
Yeah.
And I think as a result of that persecution, there is going to be a great revival, because so many people have bought this fiction, and they have this total allegiance to this fiction, and they defend this fiction almost more vigorously than they will defend God.
Right.
And I think when this fiction starts killing people like what Hitler did to his citizenry, because it wasn't just Jews, he persecuted Jehovah's Witnesses terribly.
Oh, yeah.
And his political opponents he was just merciless to. And I think after the system finally starts doing that to people, people are going to get their eyes off of the system and look to God, and I think we're going to see that great revival. But I think the catalyst thing that's going to make it happen is this total persecution. And then after the revival, I think that's when you're going to see the rapture.
Unless the trap is so carefully laid this time, you know, there have been conspiracies all through history, you know, for one world government. But this time, with computers, and the trap is so carefully laid, this is going to be difficult, if not impossible, too.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to reach that point where you got to decide, are you going to stand or are you going to bow and kiss the dirt?
That's it.
And it's a fascinating study, and I certainly, John, appreciate your time. Have you taken all your time to explain this? And I would like to see people know more about this. With the caution, don't spend the next 30 years doing this and forget winning souls.
Because that can just totally suck you into the point that all you're doing, you're reading volumes and volumes of man's law, and you're forgetting all about Scripture.
Forget God's law.
You know, be aware to what's going on, so you can see it. Because I have a much more appreciation for the Scripture, and I think I'm a lot closer to seeing things 20/20, right? Knowing what's going on in the Satan's fictional world. And how those two are going hand in glove with what the Bible's talking about.
Sure. Well, amen. Yep, let's not get distracted. It's so easy on every topic. You know,
win
distracted
souls.
With a basketball or distracted with a, you know. And I've got some major Christian ministries that used to be close friends of mine
mm-hmm.
that have blackballed me and ostracized me because I've discovered there's a mirror here and I'm seeing both sides and say, wait a minute now. I think I'm going to be accountable to God.
That's right.
And because I do not have a 501c3 corporation. I do not fill out any income tax forms. They think, oh, Hovind's a tax. I'm not a tax radical. I'm not a tax. I'm not rebelling.
That's right.
I'm trying very hard to obey the law.
Exactly.
The real law. The whole law. I'm trying awfully hard. And at the same time, I don't want to get distracted on this. It's amazing. My 15-hour seminar has about an 8-second statement that says, when I mention how evolution ties in with communism, and Karl Marx was anti-God in everything he did, and he invented the graduated income tax system that we have here.
Right.
And all I say is, by the way, Karl Marx invented the income tax, and it's voluntary. And I go right on with my seminar. That one little 8-second statement has brought me who knows how many thousands of phone calls. So we've got a letter explaining, you know, why I say that. And that's what I want to have this video for. If somebody wants more information, you know, maybe this will help explain. It is voluntary. Unless you're still down here.
That's right.
If you haven't redeemed your straw man, well, then you better do what they say, right?
That's it. And it's amazing. If people would just read his 10 Planks of Communism.
Right.
Folks, we have a communistic government.
We're communistic right now.
Okay. Yep, yep. Here's communism, a brief statement of communism. Satan against God. Right? I just got back from Chicago, and I visited some friends up there. And there was a young guy who recently came to the Lord, and one of his professors, you know, is a sworn communist.
Uh-huh.
And he tells them that pure communism is the ideal form of governance. But what they're telling them now is, oh, what they had in Russia, that wasn't pure communism. Why? Because we know that was a failure. So now what do they have to tell them? They got to lie to them and say, well, that wasn't pure communism.
Right.
Okay. Here's basically why I say it's Satan against God. A lot of people have no idea of what the word trespass really means. Okay. And before you can have a trespass, you have to first establish a right. Okay. After I've established a right, like life from God, gave me life, and you trespass and you take that life away from me, you didn't have the right to that life. I did. God gave it to me. So you first have to establish a right. And Karl Marx's first plank of communism is abolition of all private property.
Right.
Well, now, where did he get the authority to do that? You see, God gave us that right. And what the first plank of communism is all about is rebelling against God. And you don't have the authority to give people private property rights. That's what it is. And we can go through each one of those planks of communism and show you where it is very venomous, anti-God.
Anti-God, all the way through.
The whole thing.
And that's all I'm trying to get across. I would have to say, I'm not sorry that I mentioned in my seminar about the IRS. I am aware of the fact that there's a great learning curve to bring the average American who's down here,
right,
who knows nothing about any of this, there's a tremendous learning curve to bring him up to speed where it's all of a sudden, wow, now I understand.
Right.
And the people that are still down here might look at somebody who's got his freedom and say, well, what's wrong with him anyway?
Right.
You know, well, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm trying to obey God, you know.
That's it.
So, but I sure have to fight against the tendency to waste a lot of time and get distracted with that, you know. And I appreciate people like you that study this and understand it and are willing to help people. You know,
mm-hmm.
You've got some questions, you know. And there are many other people who want to help. I want to help introduce them to the subject, and then I want to leave it and go on and do something else. Okay.
Right.
I want to win souls and get people converted over from believing in evolution, because I think it's the foundation. So we're headed for trouble in this country, in the world. It's coming fast, and everybody's sound asleep. Just going to run right over them, and they're not even going to know what happened.
Bad.
And well, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Any final thoughts, things we did not cover, anything you want to get on here real quick?
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up there.
Okay. Get the Citizen's Rule Book. Study the Constitution. But don't let that be a distraction from studying God's Word and God's law. That's the basis of all truth. And always keep in mind the love of money is the root of all evil. Not the lack of money, which some people think.
Yes.
The love of money. Nothing wrong with money. And it's a necessary. But we don't have any money. We have a Federal Reserve note, which is a whole other can of worms that can go for 6 hours. But if you read those books that you mentioned, The Creature from Jekyll Island, and the one about the Rockefeller, that was, remember the title to that one? I've got the books, I've read them, but
there's a bunch of them.
A host of books. We'll put the names and addresses up on the screen. If you want to get off into this study, if I can caution you, keep serving God, and nothing else is going to matter. That's
right.
Most important. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, John.
Okay, Moores, we're back. I have a question I would like to ask. What would life be like if there was no money? I mean, could you imagine what we would do if there was no money? I mean, because we have a lot of talented people in the world, and if we didn't have to spend all our time hustling and bustling and going back and forth to work trying to eke out a living for ourselves, I think we can be more creative. And we're going to take a look at that. But before we do, I want to add that if you got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand, open up the line, and that one right here.
Here we go, 347.
347.
Hey, Tahaka, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on,
hey,
man?
What's going on, man? Hey, I just wanted to make a quick comment, man. You said, what would life be like if there was no money?
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, tell me about it. I mean, we're living it right now. There is no money. Realistically speaking, you know, it's being answered
now.
We got
a lot of people who actually believe there is some money.
There is some money.
See, that's the problem. They believe. They don't know. Because if we did have money, they'd be able to tell the difference. It wouldn't be no debt if we had money.
There you go.
You know, so we actually playing the role of seeing what it's like to have no money. That's why everybody's in default.
Yeah.
People out
hurting one another. They robbing one another. Breaking in people's houses. All kinds of stuff.
Trying to get some worthless paper. Exactly. Paper, which is actually talismans, because it has magical instruments on it.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
That's right.
So we actually living it out, Tahaka, but I just wanted to make that quick comment. I know you're already aware what's going on, but I just wanted to throw that in there real quick. My quick jump shot.
All right.
Well,
I certainly appreciate you calling in, brother.
No problem.
Peace. All right, air code 202.
How you doing, Brother Tahaka? This is Brother Daoud calling in.
Hey, man, what's going on?
Hey, if it wasn't any money, people would have to do what they're starting to do. A lot of communities bartering now. They're using bartering to eliminate money in so many communities now. You got a trade,
uh-huh.
You got a skill, we'll bottle and we'll exchange. Keep from using FRNs, and they got some communities that are doing that, even mortgages. People are doing that for mortgages now. You can get somebody to let you stay in their house. As long as you cut the grass, you have a skill. You can do something to offset your bills by doing a skill or something like that. But other than that, the system been embedded so much. The people are so fascinated about money, it's going to be hard to break the people out of this. Because that worthless paper had people doing a lot of evil. A lot of women selling their bodies for this paper. So you're just not going to tell somebody that this money is no good. It's worthless, but at the same time, it's a medium exchange. People use it as a medium exchange right now because the banks are not honest. They're not honoring bonded promissory notes and things like that, which they supposed to honor promissory notes and negotiable instruments, but they are not allowing the average people the remedy under H.R. 192 and so on and so forth and Public Law 7310. But I think what might have to happen with the people is I think it's this country you're gonna have to operate out of a trust, because even if you go in the court system and you beat them, it won't be in your name, but if you beat them, it will be in a trust, so it won't actually say your name, so they're not going to give remedy to the average Joe Blow in the street, so it could become part of record. So all the gatekeepers they tell all the people around all the court system, do not give them remedy unless they so determined where they'll go back and tell the next man or woman, I got remedy, but I got a lot of knots and my eyes are swelling up, so I don't know you want to walk through that fire like I did. It'll make it rough for you.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's where we stand in America. The people are so greedy where they lost it. They actually lost. It's almost like a horse. You can put something around a horse to a thin chair, and he will not run. He will stay at that chair. As if he can't pull away. So So everything is a mind trick. Just like a dog, he's obedience to you. If you hold him up, you feed him, you walk him. You can walk him without a leash once you get his mind trained. He won't even break loose and run.
That's right.
He will not break loose and run. And the so-called, I like to say so-called blacks, because we're not blacks, but the so-called blacks don't have enough love and unity the way we're supposed to. We love our oppressor for everything. Now, whatever he say, all he have to do is mention something like Christianity, and our people will freak out. We so spook about religion too much. Like if a Ku Klux Klan was going against another black man with another religion, Hebrew, Israelite, our people take the Ku Klux Klan because he say he's Christian. So we got a lot of programming that we got to get our mind out of. We deluded, and a lot of things too. They work amongst our women. See, that's the weakest link. You're not going to get too many women. We got some sisters that's rising up just to shop at the brotherness remedies and stuff, but you're not going to get no sister. My wife looking at me all crazy now. What are you talking about? Ain't no money. And you explain to him, you got to give me some money. So, you know, it's a long road, man. And I think that we have enough skills in our community. Trillions of dollars is coming through our community. I like to look at money as energy. I like to look at it more so as energy. The more energy you produce, the more outcome that you will get. The more energy. Everything is energy. You see a millionaire, that's the kind of energy he put in towards whatever he's got. Look at Mayweather. Uh-huh. Look at the energy he put in. He trains hard. He trains like a machine. So look at what he's creating from his own energy. Money is energy. That's all it is energy. You can look at it as energy.
Okay.
The more energy you use, the more you accumulate. And poor people use less energy. We use our energy on stuff like Michael Jordan shoes, stuff that just really can't get us to the next level.
Right.
Like I'm sick of my job now too, because I'm using my energy to make the company more richer than it is. I get up every day, look at my energy, the IRS take their taxes out of my money, and now I'm stuck with the crumbs. And the CEO goes play golf. His kids go to Harvard and Yale or anywhere they choose. And the only thing we get, they just put the whip on the collar. I mean, I guess that's my fault, because I'm not using my – I know how to get out this ball game, but when you get clamped down and this stuff, sometimes the moves is difficult. You have to slowly get out the system. You have to slowly get out, but they're not going to let everybody get out this system, because it will collapse. You got to have a couple of zombies and a couple of Hebrew slaves. They're not going to allow everybody to get out at once, because the system is not made like that. If it is, this whole economy will crash. So they're going to need some people that don't study and some people that don't believe, because if it does, this country will crash. Commerce will crash. And just like we got brothers and sisters that do remedies and out there, if everybody stopped, then we wouldn't be able to support the people that's on the forefront that's putting in a lot of ideas and a lot of deep research. We couldn't even help these brothers and sisters to give them
stuff like that. I have to agree with you, brother. We come to the end of the first hour. And we're going to go into the second hour, but I certainly appreciate you coming in and dropping the information for us, brother.
Okay,
and where
are
you calling
Tahaka
us from again now?
I'm calling from D.C., Brother Tahaka. I want to just mention one thing, and I'm going to step off. I hear the guys talking about how to redeem the straw man.
Uh-huh.
He was talking about redeeming the straw man. Now, a lot of us try to redeem it through UCC, through the executorship. But it's still more to it. It's still more to it.
Well, we're going to try to get to that now.
Okay.
So let me go ahead and We're gonna try to get to some remedies about this thing. But I certainly appreciate you, brother. Thank you for calling, man.
Okay, you're welcome, brother. Take care.
All right, peace. All right, Moles. Now we're back. If any of you got any more questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. And we're going to take a look at this thing now and see what would you do if there was no money. But before we do that, let's take a look at why are there no jobs in America. Let's take a look at it. This guy has some very interesting information, and I said I wanted to bring this out to the forefront so we can take a look at it, okay? So y'all hold tight. And we're going to see what it is he's got to say about why.
We could go into lots of charts and stuff, but I thought it was much simpler just to notice how Porter Stanbury expresses this. Here's why there are no jobs in America. Here's the deal. You're going to start a business or expand the one you've got now. Doesn't really matter what you do and what you're going to do. I'll partner with you no matter what business you're in as long as it's legal. But I can't give you any capital. You'll have to come up with that on your own. I won't give you any labor. That's definitely up to you. What I will do, however, is demand that you follow all sorts of rules about what products and services you can offer, how much and how often you pay your employees, and where and when you're allowed to operate your business. That's my role in the affair, to tell you what to do. Cool, huh? Now, in return for my rules, I'm going to take roughly half of whatever you make in the business each year. Half seems fair, doesn't it? I think so. Of course, that's half of your profits. You're also going to have to pay me about 12% of whatever you decide to pay your employees, because you've got to cover my expenses for promulgating all of the rules about who you can employ, when, where, and how. Come on, you're my partner. It's only fair. Now, after you've put your hard-earned savings at risk to start this business, and after you've worked hard at it for a few decades, paying me my 50% or a bit more along the way each year, you might decide you'd like to cash out, to finally live the good life. Whether or not this is fair, some people never can afford to retire, is a different argument. As your partner, I'm happy for you to sell whatever you'd like, because your agreement says if you sell, you pay me an additional 20% of whatever the capitalized value of your business is at that time. I know, you put up all the original capital, you took all the risks, you put in all the labor, that's true. But I've done my part too. I've collected 50% of the profits each year, and I've always come up with more rules for you to follow each year. Therefore, I deserve another final 20% slice of the business. Now, I'm sure you think my offer is reasonable and happily partner with me, but it doesn't really matter how you feel about it. Because if you ever try to stiff me or cheat me in any way of my fees or rules, I'll break down your door in the middle of the night, threaten you and your family with heavy automatic weapons, and throw you in jail. That's how civil society is supposed to work, right? This is America, isn't it? That's America with a K, by the way. That's the offer America gives its entrepreneurs. And the idiots in Washington wonder why there are no new jobs. Because the smart money is going offshore elsewhere to do that, these very things. As I was looking for clips to get across some of these, I stumbled on another one that I just couldn't resist including here, if you'll let me, on Obamacare. I'm not sure exactly where it came from. It's attributed to Donald Trump, and it probably was, but let's give him the benefit of the doubt here anyway. Let me get this straight. We're going to be gifted with a health care plan we're forced to purchase and find if we don't, which purportedly covers at least 10 million more people without adding a single new doctor, but provides for 16,000 new IRS agents, written by a committee whose chairman says he doesn't understand it, passed by a Congress that didn't read it, but exempted themselves from it, and signed by a president whose folks, with funding administered by a Treasury chief who didn't pay his taxes, for which we'll be taxed for 4 years before any benefits take effect, by a government which has already bankrupt Social Security and Medicare, all to be overseen by a Surgeon General who is obese and financed by a country that's broke. Is there something wrong with this picture? That does sound like Donald Trump, doesn't it? I don't want to do him any justice, but I think that's it. The point of all of this is the United States is not immune from the results of its current fiscal policies. The problem is they're treating this as if we have a problem in liquidity.
If you have a business in trouble with liquidity, you can solve the problem by getting some cash or some borrowing. Our problem is there's too much debt. Our problem is not liquidity, it's solvency. If you have too much debt, the answer isn't more debt. We're doing all the wrong, we're making it worse and worse and worse and worse. Some people argue that's deliberate. I won't get into that debate. The worst day for Americans in 2011 will be the day that the dollar is vetoed as the world's reserve currency. I understand that if you go through Singapore trying to give somebody a $100 bill, they won't take it. They don't want dollars. We're beginning to see that happen. China, the IMF, everywhere you look, you see people preparing for, pushing for the relief of the dollar as the world's reserve currency. Some people are proposing baskets. Some people are doing other things. Clearly, the destruction of the dollar is almost complete. When the Federal Reserve can no longer simply print more money to bail us out and pay its debts, the cost of everything will go up. See, the only reason we can print more money is because that money is accepted as a world currency. When that stops, that paper is worthless. The day that the dollar is no longer the world's currency is the day that your gas pump will probably cost you somewhere between $5 and $10 a gallon, maybe more. What's that going to do to the cost of the goods that are shipped? What's that going to do to the cost of food on the shelves in the stores? What's that going to do to commuting patterns? The country is going to come apart, I believe.
Greetings. I'd like to invite you out to the Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th, 2013, located in Jacksonville, Florida. 3 days of executing and planning of executive plans for 25-year agenda, operating as an economic unit. The presenters will be Shem L. of the Tamarite 2 Project, Dr. Ali Muhammad and Minister Inki of the Black Genetic Tour, Sundiata Amma L., Professor Asif Deanham L., Tahaka Amana L., Abundance Child, Fatima, the Alchemist Shabazz, Messiah L., and more. Topics will be the execution of urban geoponics, creating independent distribution systems, creating independent economic systems, genetics, private security force, the wholesale and manufacturing of natural products, Morristown, creating one in every state, Moore's Eastside Farms, putting one in every state. You do not want to miss this summit. It is very enlightening, empowering, and most of all, it's applicable. Everything that we talk about, we do. Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Log on to www.summitofthemoors.com. You can register for free. The summit is always free. You can also get your hotel room, which will be on the river at the Wyndham Hotel. That's www.summitofthemoors.com. The summits are always free. See you at the summit.
Okay, Moors, the most powerful system for total elimination of your mortgage on the globe. It stands to reason that if the United States filed bankruptcy in 1933, taking all the real money out of circulation, that our signatures on contracts and stuff is the only thing that's left. Now, we have a system that's set up to totally get rid of that mortgage contract. And if you got student loan debt, if you got your child support, whatever, then we got all contract eliminator as well. And what we're doing here now for those people who are accessing either one of these new packages that's located at newfreehelpgroup.com, we are adding Talker's Archives to it, absolutely at no charge to you. So get over to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Okay? Peace, Mose.
Okay. All right, Mose, we back. Now, let's take a look at what would you do if there was no money. What would you do? Let's take a look at somebody else.
What makes you itch? What sort of a situation
would you like? Let's suppose, I do this often in vocational guidance of students. They come to me and say, well, we're getting out of college and we haven't the faintest idea what we want to do. So I always ask the question, what would you like to do if money were no object? How would you really enjoy spending your life? Well, it's so amazing. As a result of our kind of educational system, crowds of students say, well, we'd like to be painters, we'd like to be poets, we'd like to be writers, but as everybody knows, you can't earn any money that way. Or another person says, well, I'd like to live an out-of-doors life and ride horses. I say, do you want to teach in a riding school?
Now, America is inclined toward fascism. It has a propensity by its dominant philosophy and religion to uphold the fascist point of view. American industry is essentially a fascist institution. If you don't understand that, the minute you punch that time.
Area code 202.
Hello,
202. Can you hear me?
Out. What was that website that you just stated? You said www free health group or something.
www.newfreehelpgroup.com.
Oh, let me grab a piece of paper. I'm sorry, Tahaka. Hold on 1 second. It's
www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Newfreehelpgroup.com.
And you say they have stuff to help you with your mortgage and stuff like that?
Yeah. Once you get to the website, it'll explain everything to you.
Okay. I really need that. I'm going through some tough times right now. Okay.
All
right.
Well,
thank
you,
brother.
Go and take a look. All right.
I sure will. All right, brother.
Peace.
Peace.
Okay, now, we lost audio there for a second, and so we're going to try this hit thing here again. I don't know what happened.
What do you desire? What makes you itch? What sort of a situation would you like? Let's suppose I do this often in vocational guidance of students. They come to me and say, well, we're getting out of college and we haven't the faintest idea what we want to do. So I always ask the question, what would you like to do if money were no object? How would you really enjoy spending your life? Well, it's so amazing. As a result of our kind of educational system, crowds of students say, well, we'd like to be painters, we'd like to be poets, we'd like to be writers, but as everybody knows, you can't earn any money that way. Or another person says, well, I'd like to live an out-of-doors life and ride horses.
I said, do you want to teach in a riding school? Let's go through with it. What do you want to do? When we finally got down to something which the individual says he really wants to do, I will say to him, you do that. And forget the money. Because if you say that getting the money is the most important thing, you will spend your life completely wasting your time. You'll be doing things you don't like doing in order to go on living, that is, to go on doing things you don't like doing, which is stupid. Better to have a short life that is full of what you like doing than a long life spent in a miserable way. And after all, if you do really like what you're doing, it doesn't matter what it is, you can eventually turn it, you could eventually become a master of it. The only way to become a master of something is to be really with it. And then you'll be able to get a good fee for whatever it is. So don't worry too much. Somebody's interested in everything. And anything you can be interested in, you'll find others in. But it's absolutely stupid to spend your time doing things you don't like in order to go on spending things you don't like and doing things you don't like and to teach your children to follow in the same track. See, what we're doing is we're bringing up children and educating them to live the same sort of lives we're living, in order that they may justify themselves and find satisfaction in life by bringing up their children, to bring up their children to do the same thing, so it's all wretch and no vomit. It never gets there. And so, therefore, it's so important to consider this question, what do I desire?
Okay, Moors, we got...
My name is Michael Badnarik, and I'm from the great state of Texas, and you're watching The Reality Report.
Franchi here for a special edition of the Reality Report on Freedom.tv. We have a very special episode for you today. We will be debating the straw man. Yes, the illustrious fiction that is created when you are born, or is it? Our special guest today is David Justice, who is a We the People state coordinator from Colorado. And we will also be joined by Tony Leonard from the state of Ohio, who is a member of the We the People Ning site. A couple rules that we will be employing during this debate. 3 minutes per question will be allotted, and 1 minute per response. If your laptop is open and out, we would ask that you do not Google for your answers. In all fairness, the questions have been prepared by Tony Leonard and drafted and typed by David Justice. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Okay, our first question of the debate goes to Mr. David Justice. And you will have Tony Leonard will have an opportunity to respond. How does the 14th Amendment play into civil rights?
The 14th Amendment, I'd like to lay a foundation before we talk about civil rights. The 14th Amendment, of course, was passed after the Civil War. It was a function of, under the guise of freeing the slaves. The 14th Amendment provides that all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and in the state wherein they reside. The intention, as Dwight, a Utah Supreme Court ruling held, is that it, first of all, the constitutionalities in question, but let's go to the merits of the 14th. That's exactly what it did. It created a class of citizenship that before the 14th Amendment did not exist. The 14th Amendment then, because of this secondary class of citizenship that was created, created along with it civil rights. The civil rights in the context of the 14th Amendment are statutory rights. All of the rights that a 14th Amendment citizen enjoys are civil statutory rights. So that's how the 14th Amendment plays into civil rights.
Okay. There is still a couple minutes left on the clock for your response. Would you like to yield the time?
Well, let's talk a little bit more. I didn't realize how fast 1 minute doesn't go. So I still got two, so I'll say this. There's a misunderstanding, I believe, and I take the position that I don't believe that there's any such thing as a straw man. I take the position that when the 14th Amendment was created or established or adopted into the Constitution, it created a class of citizenship that then was conferred on the then black race that were subject to slavery. They didn't have standing in the courts as citizens. And as a matter of fact, in several Supreme Court cases, Dred Scott versus Sanford in particular, the Supreme Court held that blacks in that context were property. So they had no standing in the courts to sue. And so, of course, history, if you were to move through it, you would find that the issue of freeing the black slaves was always a bone of contention from the beginning, and the Civil War the war between the states was a culmination of the peak of that disagreement. But once these slaves were set free, the federal government felt the need to grant them slavery, to grant the slaves freedom and to grant them standing in the courts, and so created the status of citizenship that before the 14th Amendment did not exist. So I think we're probably getting close to 3 minutes. I'll yield the rest of the time.
Okay, there's only 9 seconds left on the clock, and I will hand over a one-minute response to the question to Tony Leonard.
Can you repeat the question one more time, please?
The question is, how does the 14th Amendment play into civil rights?
Well, I would agree that there are no such things as civil rights, but civil privileges, as civil is the same thing as Roman civil law, whereas they were granted privileges, and whereas they had fictions as well, and a fiction is something that is known to be false but is accepted as truth, and whereas they accepted foreigners as Roman citizens in order to have jurisdiction over them. And the same thing applies with the 14th Amendment. So therefore, there is no such thing as civil rights. You only have rights under the Republic. And the 14th Amendment created something that is overlaid in commerce and fiction so that they could have international admiralty maritime jurisdiction on the land known as vice admiralty.
Okay, that's time for the response. Our next question is going to be addressed to Tony Leonard. And Tony, you have 3 minutes to respond. Is it possible to separate yourself from the straw man?
It is possible to defend your position as a sovereign of your state. It's possible to declare yourself not a U.S. citizen. And the U.S. citizen is essentially what creates the straw man. And when you separate yourself from the straw man, then you have your rights. And the way you do that is you eliminate the commercial presentments that you use in order to get there and cross the other side of the fence. See, your parents informed on you when you got a birth certificate, and then you applied for a Social Security number, and this created a fiction. And it's a corporation that you use to engage in commerce. This corporation is not you. They steal your image and identity and put it on a driver's license. That's a form of identity theft. that fiction isn't you, but yet you signed for it. And the way they get their jurisdiction over you, so they can slam you with IRS stuff, with firearms laws, and, or I shouldn't say laws, they're codes and statutes. Anything from buckling your seatbelt and all that stuff is when you declare yourself to be a U.S. citizen, which is a fiction. And it says that in the non-ratification of the 14th Amendment, all persons born or naturalized in the United States in Section 1, and there is no definition of person other than the smaller case, the lowercase p, and person is not capitalized, indicating the word would not mean a natural person, but a juristic or artificial person. As the courts have said, the due process and equal protection clauses of the 14th Amendment apply to corporations, which are juristic artificial persons. This is a legal opinion written by Judge A.H. Ellett from the Supreme Court of Utah. So, basically, if you have to, first of all, unregister to vote with a voter cancellation form. You've got to get your 21 pieces of gold, pre-1933 silver coins before the bankruptcy, and silver bond that. You've got to make an A1 priority form. You've got to, which declares that, in which nobody, if nobody else contests that you're a natural person, then you are one. If no one else can prove that you are not a natural person, then you are a natural person. And you know that because when you prick yourself, you bleed. So there are also all your commercial presentments, like the birth certificate and the Social Security number, all that stuff was not assigned to you, but was assigned to your straw man. So you've got to repatriate
fine.
To the report.
Okay. Mr. David Justice from Colorado.
I would like to first,
4 minutes to respond.
I'd like to first object to the question. There's a presumption inherent to the question that if I was to address the question, I'd validate the presumption. So what I'm going to do is look at this question, and the question is it possible to separate yourself from the straw man? I can't answer that. I don't believe that there is a straw man. What I believe is that as individuals, when we entangle ourselves with the procurement of benefits from the government, such as driver's licenses, social security numbers, any type of privilege that the government would offer, if we accept that, we've entered into an agreement with the government, and it creates a contract or an agreement. And in this, within this context of this contract, there is a capacity that's created. And so in this particular capacity, I would say that, yes, if you were to substitute the word straw man with capacity, I would say absolutely. It's absolutely possible to separate yourself from the capacity that is created from these contracts.
Okay, that's time. Okay, the next question here is going to be for Mr. David Justice. And I think in the interest of speeding up the process of these questions, we're going to reduce the amount of time from 3 minutes to 1 minute per question. That should bring up the speed a little bit. So, Mr. David Justice, we're going to go to you. The question is, what does the phrase "subject to the jurisdiction thereof" really mean?
Well, first of all, let's talk about where the phrase is found. The phrase is found in the 14th Amendment. It talks about all persons born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Subject to the jurisdiction thereof is a legal term that would represent the venue within which, or the character or capacity within which, a particular sovereign authority would have jurisdiction. A juris is, of course, law, and it talks about the capacity to rule, the capacity to judge. A court that lacks jurisdiction doesn't have the capacity and standing to hear the case before it. A water court doesn't have jurisdiction over a divorce case. So jurisdiction defines the capacity of the court or the capacity of the government that you're operating within.
Okay, that's time. You have 1 minute to respond to the question.
subject to the jurisdiction. If you're a subject, that means that you're underneath someone. If you're a sovereign, that means no one is higher to you, and you don't answer to anyone, well, except for your creator who made you, of course, who is the sovereign over you. And essentially, if you want to have a model for it, there's God, the creator. There is people, we the people. There are states made by the people. There is the federal government made by the states. And then they created a mirror image. And then they flipped the federal government. They incorporated it. Then they made incorporated states to the federal government underneath of it, which are fictions, for-profit corporations. And then they made you and your name a fiction. Not you, you, but your name. So subject to the jurisdiction is you're under them rather than you being sovereign.
Okay, the next question will be for Mr. David Justice. Or actually, no, you were just responding, so we're going to go back to you, Tony Leonard. The question is, isn't it a good thing to be granted privileges and immunities from the government for all citizens?
Well, if you are a citizen, that's what you get because you're the subject. So if you have privileges and immunities, those are readily revocable by said corporate so-called government. And they can change with the stroke of a pen. If you have inalienable rights that cannot be alien to you, that are inherently a natural part of you as a natural man or woman, then they can't take those away. And that's why you have to go back to the Republic.
Okay, David, your response?
The privileges and immunities clause, and I'm a little embarrassed to say that I can't cite it in the Constitution, is found in the Constitution, basically extended the privileges and immunities of the citizens from one state to all of the states in the Union. So in other words, if you enjoyed certain privileges and immunities in a particular state like Colorado, within the United States, under the Constitution, you can be assured and you can have the expectation that you're entitled to the same privileges and immunities in all the states. So it's a good thing to be granted privileges and immunities within this context. So it's a good thing.
Okay. All right. We're going to go on to the next question, and it will be addressed to Mr. David Justice. And the question is a citizen subject or sovereign man or woman? Is a citizen subject or sovereign?
Well, you know, citizen's an interesting word. It comes from the word polis, which, you know, police, policy. It means polis, which comes from the word city. It means a member of a body politic. A citizen really is a member of a body politic. And so it gives you, while in that particular body politic, standing to participate in the government of that body politic as a citizen. Is it a subject? A citizen is no, not necessarily a subject. However, in the context of the 14th Amendment, because the 14th Amendment created another class of citizenship where, and I'll juxtapose that to the original understanding of citizen in this country, the original status of citizenship literally meant a member of the sovereign body politic of America. And so drawing a distinction between the two is critical in establishing the conversation about whether it's a sovereign man or a woman or a subject.
Okay. And response, Tony.
Citizen is a subject. End of question. The notice the lowercase c. A citizen of a state was before the 14th Amendment, and they were sovereign. They had their rights. They couldn't be taken away by the stroke of a pen because that stroke of the pen would be void, ab initio, or from the beginning. So a sovereign means that you stand outside that. There is a fence, and it does exist, and you can stand in the Republic. You don't have to be subject to all the bills and codes and regulations, statutes and ordinances. if you're a sovereign, if you can successfully defend your position. And there is no silver bullet to defend your position. That depends on how you handle it. And also the commercial presentments, of course, and you really have to study a lot of law in order to defend that. That's why it's important for us to abolish the 14th Amendment in order so that people who don't have time to study law can have the rights.
All right. Next question is for addressed to David Justice, and this question is, is there a double form of government in place?
Interesting question. I hate to read into the question. A double form of government in place. This is an extremely vague question. I'm going to do my best to... the United States federal government has a dual capacity. It has a capacity to operate as a sovereign entity within the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, Mariana Islands, and all of the territories and stock dockyards and all of the possessions and properties that the United States has. It has a sovereign capacity over that property and possessions. It, in a representative capacity, it acts as an agent of the 50 states in affairs of commerce and all of the affairs of articles. Article 1, Section 8. And so if that's what the esteemed gentleman, Mr. Leonard, was referring to, then that's what my answer is.
Okay, just for clarification, these questions were drafted by Tony Leonard from Ohio and then written and typed up by David Justice. Okay, Tony, the...
Well, an example of a double form of government, the state of Ohio. That's a corporation, for-profit. Look it up on Dun & Bradstreet, where they list the corporations, who owns it, how it's traded currently as. Then even look up at the United States government. It's currently traded as Barack H. Obama, and you'll notice that it's in all capital letters, and it's got an abbreviated middle initial in it, which is not a full Christian name at all. Full Christian name is what the name you're given, with one uppercase letter, the rest lowercase, full middle name. I should say last name. It's first name, last name, and then family name. And the double form of government, another example of that would be how the district courts of the United States were switched, which were the de jure government, were switched to United States district courts, all capital letters. Look it up on Dun & Bradstreet. You'll get the business report. It operates in a totally different jurisdiction outside of the common law.
Okay, that's your time. The next question will be addressed to Tony Leonard. Is this Congress the de jure Congress of the Republic?
Addressed to me?
Yes, addressed to Tony.
This is the de jure.
And let's clarify Congress. What Congress we are speaking about, because we...
The Continental Congress is the de jure Congress of the people, because they were elected by the people, for the people, to represent themselves. We are not... We are not subject to all those other bills and statutes and all of that stuff. We are working towards, to get to the common law. A lot of people are trying to work by helping pass bills and trying to open up the prison cell to just a slightly bigger prison cell, like a box. You got to get outside the whole thing, and some of them are doing a very good job and know exactly what's going on, and I fully support it. When we enforce the provisions that come out of this, we will have a republic back.
Okay. You know, I think what I'm going to do as the moderator, I think I'm going to try and speed this up a little bit more, try and tighten up these answers for our viewers at home by bringing the count from 1 minute down to 30 seconds. 30 seconds, all right? We're going to the speed round, as you might say. Okay, so...
I would...
If you... Mr. Justice, do you have a...
I would respectfully request at least equal time, and I was going to ask you if I could get another minute on this one, and I could make it interesting.
Okay, if you'd like to, I'll give you equal time to respond to this, and then when we go into the next question, if everyone agrees, we'll cut it down to 30 seconds.
Okay.
I prefer a minute, but...
Okay, then we'll keep it at a minute.
Okay.
If that's if everyone's okay with that?
Okay, I'm good with that.
All right. Response?
Absolutely not. And let's define the word de jure before we answer the question. De jure basically means lawful. What constitutes a lawful government? I would offer for your consideration that when a government becomes destructive to the ends it was established to secure, the people have a right to alter or abolish it as pursuant to the principles of the Declaration of Independence, which also says that when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce the people under absolute despotism, the people have a duty to throw off that government. Well, if the people have a duty to throw off a government that has committed a long train of abuses and usurpations, then clearly that government loses its obligation to the people. It drops the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So if the government continues to operate as though it had authority, it's operating in a de facto capacity, and it's no longer acting in a de jure capacity. We here at Continental Congress, I would not argue that we're the de jure government. I would argue that we are the people, representative of the people, coming back to reclaim our sovereign capacity against a rogue government.
All right.
May I have 10 seconds to respond to that?
Yes, you may.
Well, in my opinion, when the people come together as a body, they are sovereign. And that's what we're doing right here. And they were dutifully elected.
All right. Now the next question is directed at David Justice. What is the difference between the two forms of government, if there are two forms at all?
One is a corporate capacity. The other is a representative capacity. In the corporate capacity, the government is sovereign within the bounds of its jurisdiction and within the bounds of its venue and anything that that government claims to have ownership over. It's sovereign. In its representative capacity, the government is answerable to the people. It's merely an agent performing as though it had a power of attorney, i.e. the Constitution, to do the will of the people as expressed through that Constitution.
Repeat the question one more time, please.
Okay. What is the difference between the two forms of government, if there are two forms at all?
Well, in one, you have the Constitution for the United States. The other, you got the Constitution of the United States. You got the Uniform Commercial Code on one side. You got the Bill of Rights and all that on the Constitution on the other. You've got martial law rule in the 14th Amendment side. You've got common law on the other. You have grand juries that make presentments independently on the common law side and on the Republic. And on the other side, you have federal prosecutors who control it 99.9% of the time statistically through indictments. So just by changing the rules of procedure. So one is lawful, like the law of gravity. The other is man's opinion on law. And those can change. One has money with substance and form. The other has money with just form.
Mr. Franciano, may I have just another 10 or 15 seconds to address something?
If you'd like to address
please.
The response, 15 seconds.
Looking at the question a little bit longer, I'm embarrassed to say that I may have spoken a little bit early. Form of government, I think, refers to oligarchy, democracy, republic. If that's the case, then I'd have to say there's a lot of different forms of government. We can't limit it to just two.
Okay. Now, we only have a few more minutes left in the show. I've been instructed by our producers that we're only going to be going about 30 minutes on this broadcast. So, in the interest of time and the interest of picking up the pace, we are going to reduce the time to 30-second responses. We only have 5 minutes to go, so we're going to burn through these questions. Now, this question goes to Tony Leonard. Is the name on the driver's license really you?
I feel like I already answered that one. Let me talk about a name. It says in Black's Law Dictionary that a name is the designation of an individual person or of a firm or corporation. A person's name consists of one or more Christian or given names in one surname or family name. Now, when you look up the definition of a Christian name, it says a Christian name may not consist of a single letter. So if you have an abbreviated letter in your name, and a lot of people do, then that would designate a corporation. Even if you sign it in cursive with John Q. Public, with one uppercase for grouping, that still is a corporation because it's not your full Christian name. And
That is time.
Right.
Okay. David, is the name on the driver's license really you?
Well, I'd have to ask a question. What do you mean by the word you? If you're asking, is the driver's name on the driver's license me, I'd say no. I am spirit living in a body, and I am conscious and aware, and the name on the driver's license merely represents a capacity that the state clothes the person holding the license with. So while in that capacity, that person is operating as a driver. So the driver is an entity created by the agreement that established the driver's license.
Okay, Mr. David Justice, this next question is directed to you. Does the use of all capital letters change anything about the nature of what that name represents?
Change the nature of what that name represents? That's an interesting question, too. I'd say that the all cap letters defines the capacity that governs a person that was created by as a capacity that is that whoever is operating with that license is clothed with for the purposes of that license.
Okay, I've just been instructed that do we have to end early because
no, I'm just telling you that's the situation.
Okay, we can edit this out. Talk to me.
Okay. Right now, the way that the plug is, it has to go in the mixer. It keeps popping out of the TriCaster because it can't sit it in there all the way. It's just the way it is. And so we.
What are they doing in there?
They're getting ready to get going again.
In the auditorium?
Yes.
It's gonna be an all-nighter.
It's a late nighter.
For us, we'll just set it and go.
Forget it.
But
how much time do we gotta give here?
You can take as much time as you need. I'm just saying that the situation with the IO, I'm working on trying to find it.
Understanding words is what you really need to start doing. You need to start doing your homework and understanding words. If you put an S in front of words, it becomes swords. And that's what words are. They're cutting. They can cause you great trouble. Humans are word control creatures. So we need to establish what words mean. Again, when we talk about law, there's a Roman maximum in law that says, for he that would be deceived, let him. Simply meaning, if you are so ignorant as to be deceived, then that's your business, that's your problem. So you need to do your homework and find out what words mean, especially in relation to law and government, because there is a world of occultism that is operating today throughout the world, in which you use certain words, and when those words are used in a court, they don't mean the same thing at all. Understanding law and the words of law, there are two things that this planet has: water and earth, water and land. Consequently, there are two kinds of law: the law of the land and the law of water. You've heard the term law of the land, but in point of fact, that's precisely what this word means, law of the land, because it is the people who live on land. And that is opposed to something else called the law of the high seas, or the law of water. You need to understand the difference. The law of the land is the law of the culture that lives on the land. And so consequently, the law of the land is different in every country. You can do things in America you can't do in Russia. You can do things in Africa you can't do in England. So the law of the land is the law of the culture that lives on that particular land. However, there is a higher law that dominates the entire world. It's called the law of the water, or the law of the high seas. The law of water is referred to as the law of money. It doesn't matter what color you are, where you're from, or where you live. Money is money. And any time you're doing banking or using money, you are now under the law of water, maritime admiralty. If you go back in history, in ancient history, where all of this began, back in the land of Cana, and you probably have heard in the Bible, the land of Cana. The Canaanites were Phoenician bloodline. And in the ancient Phoenician language, Cana meant merchant, banker. The very word merchant comes from myrrh, M-E-R, for the sea, for water. As a mermaid, we have merchant. Merchant, bankers. Let me give an example of the difference between the law of water and the law of the land. The law of water, as I said, is a law of banking, money, as opposed to the law of the custom of the people or the law of the land. The Statue of Liberty must be put in water. It could not be put on American land as such. It had to be put in the harbor because it's not the Statue of Freedom. It's a Statue of Liberty. Liberty is what a sailor gets when he pulls into port on a ship. He gets liberty. He's not free. So America is not the land of the free and the home of the brave. We're not free or brave. Period. We're not free. This is not a free country. Now let me give you an example of how this law of the water works. Why is it that you have to go to court? People are always concerned about going to court. You go to court because you play basketball and tennis on a court. How do you play tennis on a court? You play with a racket. Why? That's what it is. It's a racket. And make no mistake, they do not pick words by chance. These words are very serious. They do not use words and terms with no avail. These words are very important. When you go into a court, what's the idea of going to court? It's a game, like basketball. The whole idea in a court is to put the ball back in the other guy's court. One team gets up and they throw the ball over to that team of lawyers. That team gets up and throws the ball back into their court. And consequently, it's a ball game. And the judge is wearing a black robe, so he is the referee. The judge is the referee. He doesn't care which side wins or loses because he's going to get paid anyway. So he couldn't care less. He's merely there as a referee, and that's why he wears a black robe. And that's another interesting subject we can get into later. But the judge is a referee between two teams. The judge, we are told, rules from the bench. The word bench in Latin is a bank. Therefore, the judge rules for the bank. Where do you find banks? You find banks on both sides of a river. They're called river banks. And what does a river bank do? It directs the flow of the current. See? The juice. Consequently, your money is currency because it's the flow, the cash flow. And I'll give you an example of how this works. When a ship pulls into a harbor, all ships are referred to as female. Airships, rocket ships, sailing ships are always female. Why? There's a very good reason. Maritime admiralty banking law says all ships are female because they're carrying items. They're carrying items for money. And so consequently, they are under maritime admiralty law. Admiralty is where we get the word admiral, admiral of the Navy. Let me give you an example of how this works. When a ship pulls into harbor, It parks at the dock, and it ties off at the dock. The captain has to provide for the port authorities a certificate of manifest, because yesterday the ship was not here, but this morning the ship pulled in, so it has manifested. So consequently, all the products, the $800 million worth of TVs or Toyotas, have manifested. So each one of those items coming off of that ship has come off of water. And each end, they have come in a ship. And consequently, on a ship, all ships have a captain. The word captain comes from a Latin word, capital, money. So the captain represents the money that's on board the ship. And as I said, the captain has to present to the port authorities a certificate of manifest for each and every item. How much does it weigh? What color is it? How many doors does it have? Etc. And consequently, the captain presents a certificate of manifest. The ship is sitting in its berth. Wherever a ship sits when it docks is called its berth. She sits in her berth, berthing a ship. Consequently, all the items, as I said, coming off that ship represent money. They came in on water. They are maritime admiralty product. And this is true all over the world. Now, when you were born, your mother's water broke. And when your mother's water broke, you came out. And this is why you have to have a birth certificate, because you are a maritime admiralty product under international law. You are considered, your body is considered a maritime admiralty product. Your mother delivered you. This is why if you go to Sears and buy a refrigerator, they will ship it to you. They will deliver it. And that's why you were in your delivery room. Your mother was delivering a product. Maritime admiralty. You came down your mother's birth canal. And once you and as you're taking one of the televisions or the cars off the ship and it falls down and breaks, that's all right. Sometimes they're stillborn, so consequently you've lost money on that one. Therefore, you have to have a death certificate. And it's always signed by the doc. The doc has to sign your birth certificate and your death certificate. All of these words and terms are maritime admiralty banking words. And therefore, if you understand lawyers and judges and courts and government are all under international maritime admiralty law. All religion.
Okay, Moores, we have come to the end of the broadcast, and I hope you all have gotten something out of this thing. And we're going to come back and see if we can do part three and get all of it out so that we can clearly understand how this whole thing is put together, okay? Don't forget, August 16th through the 18th, Moores Summit right here in Jacksonville, Florida, in the Wyndham Hotel. Be here. And don't forget for a total explanation to this whole thing is located right in Tahaka's archive, but you go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and once you get over there, you give me a call, and then we can discuss this thing and get you rolling, okay? I've been your host, Tahaka Omana El Bay, and until next time, you all have a good evening, okay?